Strap yourself in.
Because we're set up, switched on, and ready to go.
Yes, sir. Reading you loud and clear. Clear. The clock has started.
Five, 4, 3, 2, 1.
This week's episode of our podcast. Today we are going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our field. By sharing our collective expertise, we will show you how to harness, control, and use your own skill set to achieve ultimate success and live the life you want. And now, please welcome your host.
Welcome to this week's Smallest Guys podcast. This podcast is designed for small government contractors, service providers, and manufacturers as part of the government contractor ecosystem, connecting people, organizations, and resources. This week on the podcast, we are in person. We've got Dennis DK, the CEO. Welcome, Dennis.
Hey.
And we've got our guest, and this guest is in person, in the office, and we've been trying to get this guest on for a while. So we have Mr. Robert Latai.
Latai.
He's the CEO of a company called Direcro. Welcome, Robert.
Oh, thanks for having me on the show.
So, sorry, I butchered the name. I didn't butcher the name. I got it right.
No, it just took me a second to think about it.
I was like,
It's a funny joke with us. Latai. Goes on and on and on.
It's not a joke.
It's not a joke. Get you a problem.
I'm just horrible at it. Northern redneck, born and raised on a farm in North Dakota. Yep. That's all I can say.
Yep.
Southern kind of day. Okay, so yeah. Recro. Dennis, anything to say about that?
No. We were joking around before we started because it always makes me think of Scooby-Doo.
As long as it sticks, it's working.
Recro. So go ahead, Rob. Yeah. Tell us about what's Recro.
Yeah, give us first of all, so like keep it to like 2 minutes first. Like what is Recro?
2 minutes. That's a long
Well,
time.
That's the start. I don't want you talking for an hour by yourself.
I don't want him like, I even say don't go 2 minutes. Yeah. Tell us about it. All go right, 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
Yeah, so Recro's a small company, right? Working primarily in the IC DOD. We have some commercial work. You know, we've stepped outside of that space some, but we started within the IC, serving the intelligence community, NRO, NGA as being our primary customers. We've moved in the Air Force and some other places, but really what we're good at is going out and finding millennials, Gen Z, getting them in our company and getting them to stay. So finding that junior talent that has a lot of potential, bring it together and bring them in a place that has a culture that can hold them. And that's, that's really what we've prided ourselves with.
Okay.
So what do you do though?
Okay. So what we do is large enterprise IT contracts. Kubernetes is probably one of our largest areas, and then ServiceNow. Within ServiceNow, a big thing that we're working is the transition from Xacta and EMAS into ServiceNow IRM. And that's somewhere that we see a ton of traction today.
Okay.
Forgive my, I know Kubernetes and enterprise IT. What is ServiceNow?
ServiceNow is a large platform, ITSM being their primary function, but they cover a lot of areas around IT management. And the great thing about tying that together with something like security is that you're going to be able to use the data you're using in your change management system to drive your RMF process as well. There's a lot of automation potential there, major efficiency gains over Xacta and EMAS.
Does that help you?
Yes.
So we're doing things like pulling in data from all the cybersecurity tools and pulling that into ServiceNow and being able to get real-time visibility into the security of an enterprise, right? So we primarily work on, we do some software development contracts, but a lot of our contracts are large enterprise IT contracts where we're trying to solve a problem for a big agency. And one of those massive problems is cybersecurity, right? We've seen that recently with
everything.
Everything. And so,
pipelines and
the government standardly works in a 3 month cycle or a 3 year cycle, sorry, where every 3 years they go back and revisit the systems. They analyze, what's the current security state of that system now, 3 years after we did it last time. Well, we're looking to change that. What we're trying to do is make it so that people can look at the system every day and understand what that is live and really enable continuous authorization, which the government's been pushing to try to get to, but hasn't really had the tools to get there.
That, and what he's talking about is continuous ATO, authority to operate.
I know.
Well, I know. You know, but the tens of thousands of people that are listening to us right now don't know that.
We used to use EMAS quite a bit, but I don't think we ever used it to like the extent we needed to use it.
Yeah. For. So, and when we tie that into like our other service offerings as well, so Kubernetes, we're actually, you know, one of the only vendors when we talk to ServiceNow that actually deploys ServiceNow on top of Kubernetes. We build DevOps pipelines so we can develop on the low side, push up to secret, push up to TS, and have consistent deployments across all three environments. And that's, you know, been a massive gain in efficiency for those agencies as well.
So you've got developers mm-hmm. that work for you. How big
I was getting that's my question.
So we're hoping to break 50 in the next month or two. That's our goal. And you know, we'd like to get to 100 by the end of the year. We're pushing really heavy into business development, you know, looking okay. inside our standard space and also pushing out into other places like commercial.
And you guys are remote.
Most of us are remote. You know, we just had an interesting conversation about that earlier. But everyone who's not supporting a TSSEI contract that requires you to be in an office, you know, is remote. We prefer that. You know, we have people in Chantilly, Virginia. We have people in Dayton, Ohio, Colorado Springs, Denver, Florida, California. Right. So we're really spread out for a company our size.
Okay. So hold on. I want to hear him. What his plan is, what we talked about in the coffee area. So tell us what your plan is in the next few weeks, days, whatever.
Yeah, so I'm head down to Virginia, right? I'm work there, visit my parents for a little bit, and then I'm going to fly down to Florida and get on a boat, you know, sailboat that I bought, and work off my boat for, you know, at least a couple months, if not longer. We'll see how it goes. All about interconnectivity.
Yeah.
Nomad.
Yeah.
That's a new thing, Nate.
I think it's always been a thing for certain jobs, but
it has. But more people are doing it now because you can because of COVID. I was going to ask, how's that work for? Because all the customers you named there earlier are primarily classified customers. How are you guys working that? If a lot of you guys are remote, can you guys do most of that work remotely, or do you get like certain access things? How are you guys doing?
Yeah,
that?
So it's a mix, right? Okay. We have when COVID hit, you know, everyone freaked out, and,
right?
You know, we had to find ways to work remote. And so doing things like what I mentioned with ServiceNow, we're developing on the low side, pushing up to the high side. We can do most development on the low side. We only need one person in the office really to monitor that high side deployment, push it from
the system.
Yeah. Well, push it into production, right? You just need one person there, hit the button, push it into production.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I was curious how all that works.
Now you guys don't do pair programming though, right?
It depends on what the customer wants.
We're
pretty flexible. You know, we've been on contracts that say they're going to do paired programming and it doesn't work out very well. Or, you know, we've been in places where it does. It really
depends. Have you guys done any like extreme programming, XP or anything?
We've had customers that want to do XP.
Okay. So say I'm assuming, which is the same place as, or same as going as far as the technical side, like what code base you guys want to use, right? It's whatever the customer needs. Whatever's going to be right for that job, right?
Yeah, I mean, whatever's right for the problem, right? And, you know, we try to push people towards container orchestration platforms. We try to push them towards using languages that make sense for your problem, microservice development, you know, introduction of gRPC into the ecosystem. We don't see a lot of that. You know, most people are out there with REST, and we're looking at trying to, you know, push things faster, bring in new technology, but still maintain security at the same time.
So what is your background? How did you get into, the CEO of this position?
Oh, it's a long story, right?
That's good. We've got like 45 minutes. So.
So, you know, went to college for business, got out, sold cars for a while, right? 2008 was a great time.
Used
to get a
job. Or new?
New cars.
Okay.
So he's a new car salesman.
As opposed to the used car salesman.
So that was kind of rough in 2008, honestly, right? There wasn't really a good market there.
Right.
I talked to someone at Cytor every single day, pretty much for 6 months until I got a job at Cytor.
They're just like, stop calling us.
Yeah, no,
I'd
interviewed with like everyone at Cytor and eventually.
Yeah, but doing what?
So I ended up being one of their business partners, which is someone who does, we did like contracts management, subcontracts administration, pricing, those kinds of things, right? More of the administrative side.
The business side. That's what I was asking. Yeah. Not the cyber IT side.
No, that wasn't the cyber IT side. Yeah. So, you know, I did that for a while. Then transitioned into an on-site job, right? Once my clearance came through and I was a program control officer. So doing budgets, right, for major system acquisitions. Then I went to a job fair and somebody was like, I have this great job. It's perfect for you. And I coded this whole time. So when I was in Scitor working as a business partner, I automated a lot of things, built, you know, tried to build things that would make jobs easier.
How did you learn to do that though?
Elementary school before, like my dad was a software engineer. So,
okay. So, okay. Cause I was like,
got me into it. Yeah.
Most people don't really do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe today, I don't know.
Program calculus into my TI-83 when I was in high school, like things like that. But so then I went to a job fair. They're like, this perfect job for you. And I started training Xacta, which is a cybersecurity tool. And, you know, that moved into, I saw, you know, there were so many issues with that deployment where they needed to get data. They'd do something and the data would break and they needed to do updates, or we did in the old system, need to get in the new system.
Right. Taking the legacy into the new.
Yeah. So I started writing code to automate that process. And then I started looking at how could I analyze the data that we had and do more things with it. And so I ended up on a data science project around cybersecurity, which is one of our biggest projects that we're still moving forward with, is pulling all the enterprise cybersecurity data together, analyzing it and seeing, well, what can we do with this? What does it tell us?
Where are the issues? Where is some stuff, the trends kind of?
The trends and, you know, what big problems could we identify very easily that you just didn't know were out there.
So you're pulling log data, everything just across the board?
Log data, scans, network configs.
And looking at it holistically.
Looking at it holistically.
To nice.
The
point,
we asked the networking team to give us a list of their networks, right? They sent us over the IPs. We looked at it and we sent it through, you know, some code and had it actually look at the router configs and it didn't quite match. So we sent them back a revised list of their network ranges based on the data, right? And that was,
yeah.
We also did something that was cool. We took the PageRank algorithm from Google, right? The way that you find a website. And we used that against routers and switches to see what was the most important router and switch in the infrastructure.
Mm.
So which ones were the most
critical.
Important.
Yeah.
So you did essentially a trace route.
Well, we ran the PageRank. We had all the router configs. And then where a router referenced another router, we treated like a website referencing another website.
Okay.
And then we ran it through the PageRank algorithm to see which ones would be rated as the most critical.
Right.
So which ones are being hit mostly.
And so nice. What did that tell you?
Stuff.
No, but...
You wouldn't understand,
Dennis. So once you identified that as the critical one, then what?
So we actually did an enterprise risk assessment. It was all based on data, right? Which was, it's a requirement that enterprises execute this enterprise risk assessment.
Right.
And a lot of them just go out and, you know, they throw something together to meet the requirement. Well, with this, we actually took all the enterprise security data and did an enterprise risk assessment with it, where we presented that to the CISO, who we were actually directly working for at the time as his data science team.
Right.
And he started asking more questions about those routers, right? And that was like, oh, well, what's the security state on those routers? You know, what can I do to make these better? Like, is this a weak spot in my network? Do I need to spread this out so these routers don't have such a high ranking? Instead, right. There's other routers that can fill those gaps.
Well, you go to the zero trust thing. That, if that's the thing, you know, you got to really protect it. If it is indeed the center of gravity.
But you should be able to load your network better than...
Well, that's what he's saying. Then yeah. They spread it out a little more.
That's what they're asking.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't just necessarily about load, right? It was about references of that router on another router. So it's, you know, it is the hub, but that doesn't mean there weren't other ways.
Sure. But yeah, okay.
So another...
Depends on what the system is doing, right? Yeah. It could be a bad thing or it could be a good thing.
So another interesting one, another problem that we solved with this was they came and they said, well, we have firewall. We want to do firewall rules, right? Change. We want to do like enterprise whitelisting across firewalls. And, you know, at first glance, people are just like, I don't know. I don't know what to do with it. Okay, yeah. Fine. Seems fine. Okay, if that's what you're saying, we need to do. And then what we did was we took all those rules they wanted to do and actually looked at the actual impact of all those rules across the entire system, along with every firewall request that was ever submitted to find out how could they meet their goal without exposing the enterprise in a way that wasn't.
Did you model this in or an actual build an actual model like MBSE basis measuring or
no? So we used all the data to look at with on these ports what were the vulnerabilities, right?
Okay.
In these networks because we had all that data, and then you know what else with the requests that people are making? What are they actually requesting? Like, why are they requesting to go to a certain, like, why are they requesting this port? Where are they actually trying to go? So then, you know, there might be a much more restricted rule that made sense.
Now, if a customer asks you to do this, are you also the team that then fixes whatever they want to fix, or are you guys acting more of
the assessment guys?
I mean, it depends more on, well,
that was previous, right? That's your last company. That wasn't this company.
No, that was this company.
Oh, it was. Right.
So we don't act as, we act on the engineering side, right? So we're primarily the people that fix it now.
Okay.
And we build platforms that can do that kind of analysis. But, you know, because we saw where the work was for us, right, with our passion of Kubernetes and container orchestration and, you know, cybersecurity tool deployment more so, right, than the process itself and being, you know, your CETA support. We don't do that type of analysis necessarily anymore, not that we couldn't. We do a lot of big data orchestration tools on top of an orchestration platform, right? So deploying big data tools on top of Kubernetes, deploying big data tools in general, data pipelines, right? Bringing all this data together, data normalization, getting the data to a point where an analyst can go look at it and find these kinds of things.
Hmm. Yeah, from a car salesman to doing this, that's kind of an interesting journey, man.
Yeah. Well,
most people that have business degrees aren't really technical people.
Well, that's why I was asking, because I've got an MBA, but I can't do it. I mean, I'm familiar. I was in IT services, my last job, but it was, you know, I'm not the technical guy. I'm not the guy who did the coding. That's why I was asking how you got into that.
Yeah. So that's the job I ended up doing. That's kind of like my job path on the education path. I went back to school again, got a second master's in technology management, and then that was it for that.
So you've never had formal coding training. You just kind of learned it.
I think it's so overrated. And I think that's a big problem with the government, right? Is that...
Well, yeah. You have to have purple squirrels, right?
Yeah.
Certifications here.
Yeah. You want certs, you want education, you know...
Experience.
The smartest guys in my company have no degree, right? They don't have any certs. Except for Security Plus, probably, because they
have
to, right?
Right. The government. You have to, right.
So I made them get it. But it's their passion. Like, their passion is IT. Their passion is Kubernetes. They're contributors to, you know, core open source projects for these things. And
so it's a culture thing for them.
Yeah.
But it sounds.
Well, a lot, that's the big push right now is saying, you know, Musk says it too, but all the guys I follow are like, you know, this whole, you got to have all these degrees, you got to have all these certs. And I mean, again, they're check blocks, you know.
Now, with that being said,
there's a standard.
There has to be somewhat. So, because if at some point, if you never have any education, even though it doesn't matter if you can do the work, the government can't pay you at that same level of somebody that does have the education they're looking for.
That's the problem.
Also, I think
that's an auditor trail, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So that's definitely a big problem with a lot of government contracts, right? Which is, you know, why we're looking at other types of vehicles, because we are finding this talent that's incredibly skilled, doesn't have the certs, or we're getting into school, right? We're like, okay, you gotta suffer through this. You gotta get a degree, right? I need you to do a couple other things so I can prove that you're this person. But in reality, I think what the government needs to do is get out of the way, right? They need to give companies responsibility and then hold us accountable to deliver.
Right.
So it shouldn't matter if I'm bringing in someone who, you know, is a genius with no education, has a passion for this stuff, versus I'm bringing in someone who has a doctorate and doesn't know how to do anything, actually, which is, you know, I find a lot on contract.
Yes.
Yeah. I agree with you.
In all cases, yes, I agree with you.
Well, I think you and I talked about this before, Dennis. It's everybody has their place. But I, you know, so I do value education. I think if not for anything other than to prove that you have the capability of learning, mm-hmm. right, in a structured manner, I think that's key. But like you said, is in certain scenarios, especially with certain customers, especially on the commercial side, who cares if you have a degree or whatever? Yeah. It doesn't matter. You can pay that person $150,000 to $200,000 a year, because they're not going to ask you to have. They're not going to have their hand into your hiring process of who you should hire. Where on the government side, a lot of times they would say, "Well, I need to have. They need to have this cert, have a master's in this, and I want you to pay
entry level
half of what they should be making.
Entry level.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. We have so many people right now because we're probably 90% like cleared people with our company, like 85 to 90, and we have a number of those people who do not want to to get out of the cleared space. There's not enough premium, right? There's too much.
Well, you're kind of capped.
Yeah.
Salary ranges matter here in the government side.
Well, even then, there's just not, there used to be, I think if we go back like 10 years, 15 years, there was a premium if you had a clearance. And I don't think that exists. Like, our highest paid work is commercial and uncleared.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, yeah. No, so what kinda, the premium still exists, but it's not a premium for a salary. It's a premium for you're going to have a job for the rest of your life no matter
that's
what.
True.
That's what the premium is. It's never been salary.
But this is the gig economy. Don't People true. Don't care about that
anymore. I was
going to
say, yeah, I don't know if that's even true anymore. So in the industry side, what are you guys doing? What kind of space? Hospital, medical, anything? Manufacturing? That's
banks.
A big... Banks.
Oh. Like things that...
I wasn't ready for that one.
Banks, healthcare, like healthcare records, like things like that.
For data.
So people who care about security, right? So we ride in, you know, with this level of, yes, we've done this within cleared space.
Are you guys playing around with blockchain at all?
No, we're not playing, other than my Coinbase account, which is...
Do you want to? We can hook you up with some blockchain guys here in town. Seriously. They're doing more and more secure the vote, stuff like that.
It's coming.
Ledgers.
Right?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it is coming.
We definitely had a brainstorm thing around, you know, secure the vote. Secure the vote's an interesting one because, you know, voting requires like being anonymous, right? Yep. Anonymous is a really important feature of our voting system.
And right.
So when you bring blockchain into it, you have to find a way to make sure it's anonymous, but then you also want the person to be able to go see their own vote and right. know like how they did it securely. So
right.
it
so
introduces a lot of problems.
It's anonymous. Okay, hold on. It's anonymous for what your vote, how you voted, mm-hmm. but
yes.
not who voted. That yeah. should not be anonymous,
I agree.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing yeah. now is voter identification.
So I don't know if you know, manufacturing right now is kind of, now that we had the pipeline hack too, you know, that's the energy sector. Mm-hmm. But I know on the manufacturing side, that's been a big sore spot really that hasn't gotten a lot of focus from the whole cyber piece as much anyways. I mean, it's out there, but you know, the whole supply chain piece, but more so into the manufacturing of the supplies is an area that I think is still really open. That there's, you know, not a lot of love given to it yet. Now, even in the energy sector, now that we've had the big hack on the pipeline, I think that has definitely gotten attention now. I'm still waiting for the manufacturing to get hit. You know, you were just showing me all the SpaceX stuff. Oh, look at all the SpaceX stuff. They show you where it's all built and where everything is and what systems
are
using.
It's all out there if you can find it.
And I'm like, well, man, if I was a hacker, boy, that's just, I'd be drooling.
There's a hole somewhere. Right?
Yeah, right. I mean, there is everywhere.
But that's why you have companies out there that you pay them to, hey, find my holes for me, find my vulnerabilities.
Yeah, but I don't think they're doing that as much on the, like I said, the manufacturing side yet. That's an area that I think there's a lot of opportunity.
Okay. Right. I think in general, like where they need to look is how proactive are people actually being at finding their security vulnerabilities and maintaining their state. And,
yeah.
And that's something where I
internally
think everyone is lacking, and it has a lot to do with visibility and getting there.
I agree with you.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. We got to get, a word in from our sponsors.
Yeah, Devil Dog.
Yeah, we'll be right
Perfect
back.
Perfect timing.
Did you know the Department of Defense has over 350,000 contractors? Many of these firms will be forced out of business in the year 2021 because they are not CMMC compliant. Livelihoods will be lost because they have not implemented the CMMC protocol. Devil Dog Cybersecurity partners with contractors to create and implement robust cybersecurity solutions that meet the DoD requirements. Our team of engineers have a large depth of knowledge in the CMMC and NIST 800-171. Solutions can be implemented in as little as 30 to 90 days, depending on the size and scope of the project. Best of all, DevilDog has an affordable pricing structure specifically designed for small to medium-sized business. The big question is your firm ready for a CMMC audit? Contact DevilDog Cybersecurity and receive your free vulnerability assessment with no obligation. Register for your free assessment at devildogcyber.com. DevilDog is here to make cybersecurity compliance affordable, fast, and painless. Our solutions let you focus on doing the work you do best, the heart of your business.
Welcome back to this week's Smallest Cast Podcast. This week, we've got DK in the house. Welcome, DK.
I still have that music in my
head. That's awesome.
Now. The music's good. The narrating, he sucks.
He probably, but that's okay.
It's him.
It was for the right price.
Rob, it's him.
Okay, so back with us, we've got the CEO of Recro, Mr. Robert Latai.
He struggles every time.
I do.
So we were talking aliens. So yeah, what were you saying? What were you saying?
I was just saying, I mean, if we watch the news, right, we're seeing these UFOs right from the military.
Yeah.
It's a question of what are they and what's the scariest
scenario,
right? You have really only like three options, right? It's Russia, China, or aliens.
No, or us. Four options.
Or us, yeah. Us is definitely an option. You're right.
It's classified programs, probably. Could be, yeah. A lot of it. Yeah, but I like the aliens one. Yes.
Aliens brought us COVID-19.
I mean, the Pope said aliens are cool, so.
They are. I'm still waiting. You know, I follow the, have you ever been down to the station down there in Socorro? Mm-hmm. Oh, dude. The large array down there. You need to take a road trip. Yes, go down to Socorro, get some good Mexican food, and then swing right, go west.
You know.
And there's huge array out there. It's called the large array something. And it is actually one big dish, but they're on tracks, and they're these huge radars. And it's actually one big bowl, and they collapse and expand. It is awesome.
That's awesome,
yeah. It is awesome.
Did you hear about...
And you can go to the museum. They have a museum and stuff out there. Go ahead. What?
Is it the Arecibo one down in Costa Rica?
Yes.
That one collapsed.
Oh, yeah. It like fell, right? Yeah, I heard about that. It's like in a volcano.
I didn't like hear this on the news.
No, the cabling all snapped. Oh, you're talking about that one. Yeah, the cabling, it's old.
Have they rebuilt it yet?
No, they're not going to.
Really?
Yeah, the cable's all, the thing, so that whatever the cone is in the middle that was hanging there.
The feed,
the cable snapped.
Oh, my goodness, I swear to God.
The cable snapped.
How are you that part thingy, of this company?
That thingy that was in the middle there, the gondola.
You know the techie thingy?
That electronic thingy?
That makes
thingy?
Us talk with SETI? Search for extraterrestrial?
The real.
That's on my computer at home, by the way.
I've been watching Bigfoot videos at home with my wife. Yes.
So do I'm you ever believer. Watch these videos?
I'm a believer. That and Swamp People.
They're like, hey, they might have found Loch Ness. So you spent like 2 hours on a Saturday night watching it. You're like, in the end, you're like, well, they didn't find her. What the hell?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. YouTube, you get on the dark side of YouTube, right? And that's, you never know what you're going to find out there. And it never really goes anywhere. Right now I'm stuck on, you know, the crypto.
How are you?
The crypto stuff.
The cryptocurrency?
Yeah. Like Doge and.
Nice. I really haven't.
It's
it
not, it's
me.
Not dog. It's not, Doge.
Yeah, it's Doge.
I don't.
I didn't know.
I'm a huge tech guru, geek, whatever, but I'm not okay with a cashless society.
Oh, let's put it this way. I went to bed one day and I was trying.
He's a CEO, so he went to bed one day.
I was trying to trade Doge, right? And
yeah.
And I sold it and I went to bed, like try to be peaceful, go to bed right. Without any holdings.
Right.
Yeah, I woke up, I would have had like $1 million if I didn't sell.
Yeah. Well, that's how it all goes, right?
It was painful.
Yeah,
that's why you don't day trade because either one or two things could happen. You're going to go insane.
What's the company here that does mining, crypto mining? There's a company up at the old
I don't know, but if you go on
Intel Factory.
If you go on Facebook, they have, you can buy mining equipment on Facebook now. Everybody's selling like, oh, you can buy this for just $150,000.
It's a
you
huge can, energy sucker, though.
Well, it's a huge markup, too. So, like, the like most powerful like Bitcoin miners right now, I was looking at buying some in there. You can buy them like new for like $2,800. Go on eBay,
$10,000? $10,000.
I guess I don't understand. I'm not into it.
I don't know either.
Why can't you just build it yourself? Just repurpose your...
They're ASICs. They're like, you cannot, like a CPU can't compete. So like with Ethereum, it's GPU-based mining. Right. But Ethereum in December goes to proof of stake, not proof of work. So they're moving off that thing that Elon just talked about bad about. And there'll be no more mining of Ethereum. It'll all be based on your holdings and how much you stake.
I just don't get it. Like I said, I'm afraid of going away from a cashless society personally. Because I'm not a big government guy, so I don't like people tracking everything, right? How do you pay your 12-year-old, teach them about money? How do you pay that 12-year-old without
money?
Money. Well, what?
You give them credits.
But you can't do that because then that's going to be traced. Then your 12-year-old's going to have to pay taxes.
Yeah, I mean, my dad just kept me in debt, so I had to keep working. He had like a ledger where you just write down.
To me, it's a huge problem because I'm not saying I'm opening a sweatshop with my children, but I'm saying you have to teach them about.
Do you have a sweatshop with your children?
No.
You have other people's children?
I'm not saying that.
He grew up on a farm, so yeah, he has a sweatshirt.
He did.
It's called raising responsible young
there
adults.
There you go.
It seems to work.
So instead speaking of raising
Gen X sometimes right
and,
now.
So speaking of that, so let's talk, we talked on the break here for a second, but so, you know, as you've been developing your company and you started with you, how many people did you start with?
Yeah, so it was just, so the way I got, the way records started is interesting, right? Like, and I think the opportunity is out there for a lot of people if they keep their eye open. One, you have to be ready for it.
So what does that mean?
So I had this opportunity, I had the opportunity to create Recro 2 years before I actually created Recro. And that was the contractor I worked for on the contract I was on got booted off by the prime for not joining their team for the recompete.
Hmm.
And so when that happened, my job was gone, right? Someone told me I was TDY. I was traveling around and the lady from the prime that I was working with, she was like, you know, just so you know, your company is getting kicked off on Monday. So you got to figure out, you know, where you're going to work.
Right.
And she gave me a number to one of the subcontractors on the contract. And I hit them up and they started the paperwork. And then, you know, click in my head, I was like, oh, why am I joining another company? Why don't I become my own company? And unfortunately I already reached out to that company. I started the wheels turning. So the prime stayed with that company. Well, about 2 years later, the same kind of situation happened. The company I worked for sold my division to another company and the benefits were going down. And it was like, well, it was just
not changing.
This was right after the CEO said, we're not looking to sell a division. Right. Like, a week later, they're like, oh, we sold your division.
Yeah.
Gotta love how honest people are.
Yeah.
You know, that's something we definitely try to pride ourselves with, just being honest with our employees, telling them what's going on. And, you know, we really try to, we're an employee focused company. Like that's what we focus on. But anyway, so when that happened, I went to the prime again and I was like, you know what? I want to be my own company. And they were like, okay, sounds good.
They help you establish your own company who helped you do that?
So I created it when that first opportunity happened, but it was too late. And then once the second opportunity came around, I already created the LLC and I went to them and they were like, yeah, sure, you can do that. And they brought me on and it was just me for, you know, a couple of years. And they didn't really, at that point, they weren't really giving me an opportunity to grow.
Mm-hmm.
But then the end of the contract came, nobody else wanted to staff it. And they were short on positions. So then I started staffing more positions and then we rolled into a different contract, mainly because the work that we were doing was determined not to be CETA work. It was determined to be engineering work. So we moved on to an engineering contract that was already existing. And you know that opened up the opportunity for us to grow a lot more.
So did that prime you worked with, did they help you to establish your company or did you do that kind of on your own still? Did they like mentor you and say, hey, here's, you know, what you should be doing to grow it?
No, I mean, I knew how to make the company. They did help me. There's this thing called MBO Partners, which is if you're out there by yourself and you're thinking about starting your own company, I think it's a really good short-term solution. So what that does is it takes the liability off the prime contractor for 1099-ing, where like states like California will be like, oh, well, they're actually your employee and you need to pay all these taxes.
Right.
And
yeah.
So people are a lot more, I think large companies would be a lot more open to you being a consultant or like being yourself if you go through something like MBO.
Well, so
what does MBO do? So the insurance guys and all the other benefits stuff to it too?
Yeah, they had all the benefits, they had all the insurance in there, right? You would put your time in with them. They would do your invoicing, right? They would pay you like, it's kind of like a company.
They were kind of like the overhead.
It's kind of like a professional employer organization, like a PEO, like ADP, but only for consultants, not for companies, right? Where as a company, we use ADP Total Source. I think that's, you know, I think it's really important to outsource things that aren't your core functions or don't, like where you can't create any value.
Spoken like a true small business.
ADP, is that like the security company? Same guys?
I don't think so. No,
that's ADT.
No. ADP is...
ADP.
So, right, it is.
ADP is massive, right? But
I need more coffee today, man. I'm just we were talking aliens. I got excited.
So with ADP, and my brother actually has a small business too, and he also uses ADP to make these things easier.
Right.
And what it does, they negotiate benefits, right? They negotiate healthcare plans. And then you have a bunch of different options you can offer out to your employees. They negotiate the 401k. So instead of me coming with a tiny pool of money saying, you know, give me a good deal on a 401k.
They pool it.
They pool it all into one.
Nice.
you know, they also liability wise, if we have a problem with HR, we can call them. And if as long as we continually talk to them, then they take on liability for that stuff.
Nice.
So it pushes a lot off. They also handle, you know,
you do the work.
Yeah. And we work in a bunch of states, like I mentioned, and they handle all that.
Oh, nice.
Right. So we don't have to deal with the state.
I don't think
so,
I've ever heard of them before, though. So, are they local?
But it's an employee. It's a professional employer organization is like the important part. But ADP is massive. No, they're not local.
I've never heard of them. I can't believe I haven't heard of
them. Well, we don't own our own business.
Well, yeah, but we have friends that do, and true, we couldn't push them. We got a friend who started his own business. He's been struggling with that piece.
Well,
he's
yeah,
got some local guys, but they're not.
But I think you have to be willing to pay for it, though, too.
It's pretty expensive. It's expensive, but it's...
You get what you pay for.
It's not incredible.
True, but it's kind of like if you buy real estate and you want to rent it out. Either you can be a slumlord and do it yourself, or you can pay an expert and manage your
Right.
Your well, that, I mean, that's really expensive though, right? Like the experts want, because I'm trying to do that right now, and they want like 20%. When we're talking about ADP,
yeah,
I don't think for the price I pay for ADP, I could have enough staff to do the things they do even at our size now.
Oh, really?
Like I think we'd have to get a lot bigger before we have to make that cost benefit analysis of, you know, is it worth sticking with, you know, a PEO versus
can you write that off then on your taxes?
Yeah, it's an expense. It's all just an expense.
And can you pick different packages? They have different benefits packages and all that, or you kind of so they got kind of a set?
No, they have a whole bunch of things you can choose, right? Yeah. And then they support us. Like we have a very aggressive benefits program. So we do 100% paid medical on a zero deductible plan for employees. For families, we have a high deductible plan where we pay 100%.
Nice.
But people can choose either plan. Right, families can do the no deductible plan, but they just have to pay for the people for their dependents. Right,
right.
You know, we really try to focus on any benefit we have. How do we make it fair for an employee? And you know, this might sound weird, but I don't think that it's right for me to pay someone more, give them more benefit because they have a family. Right, like I want to do it the same for everyone. So like our family covered plan and our family and our individual plans cost exactly the same. Which is why we added a second plan where families could get that benefit. We're looking at things like maternity and paternity leave, right? Mm-hmm. Well, why should I just give a benefit to someone who has a kid, right? So we're looking at what's the name of those things?
I don't know.
Sabbaticals as well.
Oh, nice.
Right, with the same commitment requirements for those plans. So, you know, offering benefits out to people regardless of their family status.
Right. Yeah, my brother-in-law works for Intel, and every 5 years they give you a month-long sabbatical. I'm like, man, that is awesome. And that's the only other company I've ever heard that does that.
Yeah, so and then on the 401k side, the PEO supports us as far as, right, we do 6% matching. And then, like, 100% vested day one. And then we do a bonus every year, right? And that's been massive, right, where we've done, like, 12 to 15% of salary annually.
So you got openings? Just kidding.
So we end up with, like, 25% 401k contribution. We don't say that out here.
So that's a good lesson learned, right? And I told you that's kind of where I wanted to go with the second half of the show, typically, is I like to talk about what have you learned as you've, expanded. That's one. And so the benefits thing is huge, right? That whole piece of management of the company huge.
I got to go back like 10 minutes ago because I've been trying to ask a question.
All right.
Did you, when you told your company, this is back in your story of how you started the company, you were working for that Prime, right?
I was working for a sub.
You were a sub.
That's a, as you said, I think it's very important that you have to be ready.
You have to be ready, yeah.
Because if you're not ready, you've now just put out
there. You missed the opportunity?
Well, no. I'm saying he's now just put out there that I'm looking to move, so I don't want to work for you anymore. So if they would say no,
well, and you have to be in a niche position too, right? Like for what I was doing, they weren't going to find anyone else to do it. Like no one outside of the vendor had that experience and that skill set. So okay. I was in a very niche position too.
Because that'd be the last thing I want to do is say, hey, I want to open my own. I want you to hire me, but then they say nope. So now because you said that. Now they're going to fire you because they're like, well, this guy doesn't want to be here anyway, so we're getting rid of this guy. So you got to be ready.
I think you also need to be ready corporately because, like you said, the opportunity. It's the opportunity. So you have to be, my company's ready. I can go. Because the first time, he wasn't quite ready yet.
I wasn't ready. And honestly, I didn't have the state of mind to think about it. And that was, and then after that, right, my state of mind was, I'm going to look for this opportunity. And when it comes, I'm going to take it.
Now, so were you moonlighting before?
What do you mean?
Well, were you doing this for any other companies while you were working?
No. I was just, I had an LLC that was doing nothing.
And okay, so you
I
had
was working my job full time.
That's what I was saying. He was corporately postured to start his company. He just hadn't done it yet because the first time he wasn't really ready corporately. He didn't have anything. So this time he was able to make the leap.
Yeah.
And luckily it was you only. You didn't have any employees, so that was also okay.
Yeah, and I think something else I'd look at right now is like structure-wise, what do you want, right? So we're going through a restructure where we're changing from an LLC to a corporation, and it would have been a lot easier just to do that up front and be a corporation to start. And you need to think about where you want to go and like what your goals are. Like my goal was never, like some people have this goal, which is just to be themselves,
right?
You know, cut the money, the profit margin out that the other company's making on you and be yourself. But my goal has always been to grow into something larger. So a corporation makes a lot more sense for us because I want, you know, those people that were with me, right? Those people that are contributing to also be able to have buy-in, have ownership and grow the company.
So are you employee owned?
No.
Right now we're 100, I own 100%.
Okay.
Right. And we're doing a change over to a corporation.
Okay.
At which point there.
Which needs a board, right?
Which needs a board and all that, but which you can just be the board too, right? As a small company.
I suppose.
You just have one person as a board member. But I have other people who have been, you know, with me on this journey for a long time, and they're going to get equity within the company. And we're trying to create incentive plans that give people who contribute to the growth of the company opportunity to get equity. You know, that's like within our company, we don't believe in having anyone do anything for free. So you go to a big company and they're like, oh, we want you to work on this proposal. But, you know, it's just an expectation.
Yeah.
Or we want you to do, you know, work on the website or work on this capability statement. And it's an expectation. We don't believe in any of that, right? Anything that someone wants to do to help the company, we want them to be compensated for. So we're looking at how to do that with equity. Right now we do it with cash, right? Based on percentages of new revenue and, you know, percentage of revenue under management, right? And trying to create those kinds of incentives, which I don't think you really see in government contracting. You know, one interesting one we do, which, you know, anyone's welcome to steal my idea out there, but if people do 100% utilization on contract, so if they bill 100% of the available hours in a month, we put them in a raffle pool. And we give out that raffle every month and every quarter. So we're talking about, instead of, you know, handing someone a $100 gift card, we're throwing $200 per person in a raffle pool, and then we're raffling that off monthly, and then we're doing the same thing at the quarterly.
I'm still confused. So my daughter-in-law tells me this story too about hours, how most people don't put in the 40 hours a week or whatever it is. What is that?
Yeah, so
that,
if we're not hitting our utilization, we're just leaving money on the table, right?
Why wouldn't you hit the utilization though? That's where I'm struggling.
Oh, because people don't work that much, right?
Like, interesting.
So they, like with our company, people are...
See, I can't go there.
With our company, you know, if we come on, right, our people are pushing to get 100% of their hours for the month, which means we aren't leaving anything on the table because we have to look at how do I, like... You know, there's ways to grow, right?
Right.
First important thing is like, how do I maximize the revenue and profit on the work that I already have?
Right.
Right. And so we obviously do things like paid overtime if the contract allows it, which, you know, some companies do bridges and stupid things like that, but for every hour over the regular hours one works, you're already paid for the overhead. So that's a lot more potential revenue, or a lot more potential profit within those extra hours. We offer people, like we're getting commercial work, like I mentioned, and other contracts that are shorter term because we work a lot with vendors, and we offer people within the company the opportunity to work on that work and get paid additional money.
So right, separate work hours from their contract is other. Yeah. So we're doing the same kind of thing too. Yeah.
Yep. So they can make more money
and
we're making more profit because we've already paid for their overhead.
Yep.
You know, then we're looking at, you know, how do we grow? And for us, I think we're a little different than a lot of smalls at our size. We don't have a single prime contract at all. Right. We have no prime contracts. You know, we've done a couple of prime proposals. We haven't won any yet. We're working on that. And, you know, it's something we're looking at more, but we kind of flipped our strategy to say we're really good at bringing in the junior people that companies need, right? And helping them meet greening goals that these massive contracts have.
Right.
Contracts with, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1,000 people.
Yeah.
Right. So, and they have these greening goals they need to meet. So we can help meet those. And we can find talent, we can train it, and we can find new positions for them later, you know, to keep them retained, because retention is like a massive thing for us. And a lot of our compensation plans are based around that. But by partnering with these big companies, they're seeing that we can deliver on those greening goals, which means that they can meet their staffing goals and make the government happy. And that's been a really good way for us to grow, is to get with the big companies that have these massive contracts and fill the junior to mid talent hole that they have at the rates that they need. and not put people in there that are just going to sit there, right? We're really looking for those highly motivated.
Right, the guys that want to work. Hungry people.
Hungry is the most important thing in the world, right? Like grit, like your ability to get out there and just and fight for something, like that is what we view as most important. So we have, we are increasing our recruitment staff. I feel like I'm hiring a new recruiter all the time, but
it's good.
None of our recruiters have ever been recruiters, right? I have one recruiter. He was a manager of a grocery store. I have another recruiter who did door-to-door sales on solar. But these guys are like,
they're knocking out of the park.
These guys and girls are hungry.
That's what I'm talking
about.
And
we do high commission base, right? Yep. Because I want to pay for performance. I don't want to have to manage someone. If I'm paying you, a lot per person you hire, right, you're going to go out there and hire those people.
Yeah.
And so, we are looking for those hungry people. And those are the people we like to give opportunity to, even in the tech space, right? You have somebody who's hungry, they'll figure it out.
Yep.
Right. They'll Google it. They'll figure it out versus someone who's been handed it through like formal education the whole time.
Right.
And they may just want to rely on that thing they learned in school.
Right.
Yep.
Yep. No, we're in the same mindset you're at. I think that's really important.
Except I don't understand the whole not doing 40 hours a week. I don't get that. Well, a government contract, you have to. That's exactly what it is. Well, I don't want to work 40 hours this week.
But they can take vacation.
Okay.
Yeah.
True, but that's part of it, right?
But what we do is we cash out vacation at the end of the year.
That's what we do.
Yeah. Because we want to get that vacation off the books, one, right? Yeah. And we also want to encourage them to work overtime.
Yeah, that's our company does the same thing. And everybody's like, you guys don't have a lot of vacation. I'm like, yeah, but you don't normally take, how much vacation did you take last year? None. Well, that's the point.
Okay, so I got a topic I want to cover with you guys. That, okay. I'm taking control of this podcast now. Let's talk about the emergence.
I was going to actually ask you about vacation.
Let's talk about the emergence of unlimited PTO.
Talking about that.
Yeah.
It's a total joke. It's a scam.
It's a joke.
It's a scam, right? Yeah. And it's great as a company.
It sounds good. Companies thought of this.
It sounds good to people. Well, California started this. And anything that starts in California, you should probably stay away from.
You should check it out.
Because it has to do with some lawsuit that came out, right? So with unlimited PTO, you don't book any PTO.
Yep.
So when they leave, you don't have to pay it out.
Yep.
There's approvals for taking PTO.
Yep.
So it's not as free as it used to be.
It's not really.
L3 Harris here in town. Yep.
You're not supposed to be busting out people.
I don't know. I'm just saying they have unlimited PTO, but you have to get permission.
Yeah.
Every time you take vacation.
Every time you take vacation.
Which makes it way harder. And as you get, if your utilization rate gets down to a certain amount, they're going to start saying, okay, you got to ask the CEO for permission to take this vacation, right? It's just going to go down because.
Yeah, and we're busy. So no, you can't.
It's different in a product company.
Yeah.
But we're services companies. And with services companies, delivering hours is what we do.
Yep.
So if anything that gets away from delivering hours is something we have to be highly concerned about. And, there are definitely people who are getting hooked, like potential employees who are getting hooked on this thing. They go to a job fair and this company's like, oh, we have unlimited PTO. And we're actually looking at potentially implementing it in some sort of fair way that makes sense. But, in general, we don't like it. But when we have someone sitting next to us at a job fair and their booth, they're like, unlimited PTO sounds great.
Or we got 30 days. We got 30 days.
What I think works much better personally, because I've been in this before, is comp time. Your unlimited comp time. So, which is let's say I work 80 hours this week. You're still getting a chance to charge those hours to the customer because you worked those hours. And then you let that employee take those 40 hours
when they want
the next week.
Or we allow that.
That's
right?
What we do too.
That just makes sense.
We call it liberal flex time, but that's.
Well, some companies, the bigger companies will have it actually is because DCMA wants to audit that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you have to have like a charge number to put that to, right? To say, or at least a container to put those hours in. And then typically you can only like accrue like 2 weeks worth of comp at a time. So that way you're not collecting 10 weeks.
So the bottom line is we're in violent agreement with you.
Yes, 100%.
You didn't take control. We're agreeing.
So I'd be interested in knowing like what is the most interesting benefits you've seen out there that small companies are offering?
The one that was giving all employees 15% of their salary every year in a 401k.
Oh, we got that beat at like 25.
On top of the 6%.
So we have a 6% and then we do a bonus, right? So that bonus is like 17%.
So we do that too. We have percentage and then a bonus.
I work for
but this is the bonus just goes straight into the 401k.
So I worked for a company, the company right before I came here, loved it. One of the things that they did is they said, okay, we love internal referrals more than anything else, because it's a lot better to bring somebody in, right?
We mostly do that too.
So what they did though is they offered huge bonuses to, if you brought somebody in, they got hired and they stayed there for 6 months, you got anywhere between a $2,000 at the low end to $5,000 bonus.
That was Northrop did that too when I was at Northrop.
This was Oasis System. So they did that. But even cooler is the CEO one day said, hey, it is February 1st, whatever. I've got 50 open positions company-wide across 10 different states and multiple countries. If we can fill 100% of those 50 positions by the end of May, every single person that submits somebody and that person gets hired, that person's names are going to go in a hat. If we hit all 50 at the end of that day, so if Dennis here brings in 10 people, his names are going in the hat 10 times. If he brings in one, his name goes in once. But at the end of if all 50 people get hired by the end of May, the CEO said, I'm going to draw a name out of the hat. And if we have all 50, I'm going to go take that person that I draw that name out of the hat and take them downtown in Boston and buy them a brand new BMW that day.
Nice.
That's cool.
And he said, if it's, you know, if we only fill 30 of these positions, we're going to do like a 10-day cruise. If we do 40 of those positions, we're going to do like a 15-day cruise.
Yeah. And that's the kind of things we're looking at, like, how do we gamify referrals? Because referrals is a massive problem.
It
right?
is.
Like,
yeah.
It's where most of your, it's where you can find most good talent, right? When you get the person in, they want the person to refer them to look good. So there's a lot of benefits to it. We've been trying to figure out how, like, because we've tried money. And, you know, there's a big study, there's a, you know, paper out there by Google that talks about, like, should you give someone a bonus in cash or should you send them on a 3-day vacation, right? And the vacation being significantly less valuable in reality than the cash.
But they liked it better.
And the vacation is way more impactful, right? Yeah. And so we're looking at, you know, that our quarterly raffles for utilization are going to be changing over to a vacation. That was our original plan. The only reason we didn't do it was COVID, right?
The moral of the story is the guy, literally somebody won a BMW. Next go round, he was going to say, we got 50 positions open. The new employees.
But I can't afford another BMW.
No, I don't know for sure, but I'm guessing he probably took out like an insurance policy on the thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because that's how they give away a car at a hole-in-one tournament, right? They have an insurance policy on it. If somebody does get a hole-in-one, I'll pay the whatever it is, $10,000 for the insurance policy, and now the insurance has to pay out the $50,000 for the car or whatever it is.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know that's the work. Yeah.
That's how they do all the golf tournaments.
Yeah.
If you get a hole in one, the probability of that happening is so low. Mm-hmm. So all they do is they literally say they promote it that way, and then they have an insurance policy that covers them in case somebody does get a hole in one.
Interesting.
That's interesting.
I didn't know that.
So we've done like Teslas for engineers where we lease Teslas for them to drive around, right?
That's awesome. For people that
have like the right skill set. And
So another thing I would do, I would say it's the small things, right? I've always told my companies that I work for, it's the little things. It's do not make your employees pay for coffee, right?
Yeah.
Freaking have coffee there. Stock your
gift cards. Like, hey, you did a great job last week, or, you know, you did a presentation. That's not only in your thing. Here's a $25 Starbucks card.
You know, my father-in-law worked for a very large oil and gas firm. And, you know, at one point they were stocking like their kitchen with like ramen noodle, just nothing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, less than $500 a month.
Yeah.
But what that does is that kept people there. Nobody left for lunch.
Yeah,
so they all work through lunch now. So you're getting more work out of these guys than them taking a 2-hour lunch because you're providing them with nothing.
He can't put stuff in their kitchen though because they're mostly remote.
They're mostly remote.
Well, so what we're doing when we're on site though is, and this has to do with our, you know, primary employee demographic, Monster. Yeah. Right, Monster Energy drinks. Anything they want, they can pretty much get.
What do you want? What would you like?
So something else I found that I tried to get people, companies to do. So have you seen the car wraps? You've seen like the Red Bull guy driving around, right? So why not do that to your employee's car, right? If you have an employee that is, especially a BD person, right? I'm going to wrap your car and I'll give you $300 extra a month for the next 3 years. Are you kidding me? I would go downtown and buy a brand new BMW or whatever, a brand new car right now and let you wrap it and give me $300 a month. I get a brand new car for free.
Right? I get that on my spam text once in a while.
But I mean, those ideas,
yeah.
Like I said, it's the little things because now you're paying for a car for somebody without having a company owned vehicle.
Yeah.
But that's how you're doing it, right? Yeah. And you're getting the exposure you're getting by somebody driving around.
I'll tell you one of the other things that we've seen, and it has nothing to do with money really, has nothing to do with benefits and all that stuff, is just leader engagement with their people.
Huge.
That's been, you know, we've been doing actually fairly well, our company here in contracts, and a lot of it has to do with the companies we're going against. They don't, like, I'd say, well, where do your guys work? What do they do? Well, I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? Well, I've never been to where they work. I'm like, what? You know, those kind of things happen a lot, over and over and over and over again. And pretty soon the employees are not, you know, I don't really care about the company. I work for the government guys or whoever, whatever customer we're supporting. I work for those guys. My company's just paying me and I don't care. And it really comes down to the corporate engagement. You know, meet with your people once in a while. Go see them on site. Have them at your facilities. Do things with them, you know. Talk to them.
Buy them donuts every once in a
while. And you know what I mean? Just be engaged. I think that, to me, is the personal piece of the whole thing. Is that's what seems to be in a lot of these companies just missing. And people just get kind of complacent, I think, is what happens, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just remain engaged with your employees. I think that, to me, is the number one thing. All the rest of stuff we'll figure out and work out. And I did want to ask one more thing, because we're probably running out of time, huh? Does RECRO stand for anything?
Yeah, so RECRO is to reinvent, right? So
it's Latin or you? It's, you're
it's
saying.
Yeah, it's Latin. It's to reinvent, right? Ah. I came from Scitor, so yeah, I guess I kind of copied what they did as far as looking through the Latin dictionary.
Nothing wrong with that.
And you know, our logo, right? We have a box and we have a gear in the box, and the idea is that we're thinking outside the box to make things work.
I love that. That's great. Thank you.
I was a story
guy. We should have asked you that from the beginning, because I'm looking at it. He's got a shirt on with RECRO on it. And I'm like, what? What is?
Yeah, I mean, you go back to the little things, right? Like we buy, I have a RECRO Patagonia on, right? Under that, I have like an Under Armour polo.
If you have any extras, I would wear your RECRO shirt.
That's the thing. Like
Patagonia shirt.
That's what the primes that we're engaged with, right, say. And that's what people say when they see our people on site. Our people wear our gear because we buy stuff that they want.
It's huge, right?
Right.
And buy your people and plaster your name on it.
Yeah, we plaster our name on it, right? We got those 1 gallon jugs for water, right? That those like they're really popular right now. I forget what company makes them.
The drinking ones?
Yeti or something. Yeah, a massive jug for water, right? We got people those. You know, other kinds of Yeti mugs, like things you'll actually use, right? I have a lot of gear I've gotten from a lot of companies and I'm just like, why did they give me this? Like, this is just junk.
Yeah.
And so
pens from China, right?
That fall apart. The pens and pads mostly.
We did order some pens and they did suck pretty bad. Yeah. So we didn't really hand those out ever. Yeah. We handed them out at job fairs.
He's got a box of them.
One? it's kind of funny when you say that, because the small businesses understand that.
Yeah.
Once you start working for the big companies, they no longer understand that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I worked for Honeywell for 15 years, and I started doing job fairs, and they wanted me to buy my own Honeywell shirt to represent Honeywell at a job fair for Honeywell. I'm like, what? They're like, well, we don't have a budget for that. I'm like, you're a multi-billion-dollar company, like the fourth largest company in the world, whatever. Are you serious? You can't supply.
Yeah, they lose visibility, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, kind of fitting into like the, you know, that whole gear and like what we do there. Like when we buy someone, when we need to get someone a computer, we'll get them a gaming computer with a really good GPU, right? So they can go load Fortnite or whatever they feel like on it. Not that I'm a Fortnite fan, but I have a couple employees that are.
Yeah. No, that's 100% true. So, I get that part. The tech side.
He complains about it. We're not techie enough for him.
No, I don't complain about it at all, but I do say, you know,
support
don't make fun of something that you don't understand. Right.
Right.
It's the little things.
Yeah.
If I go to work for a company, money is obviously it's what makes the world go around. Right. I mean, you need to be paid well, but besides that, if you allow me, or if you get some tech, I'm going to be more happy with that than a $200 bonus every month, whatever. If you say, hey, here's your gaming laptop, here's your Bose headset to go along with it, it's those little teeny tiny things. I know it doesn't sound big, but that's what keeps people like me happy anyway.
Yeah, and the price difference between that and like going with something really basic is not really much. And that's, you know, that's the big analysis.
Especially if you do mass quantities, right? Yeah. If you're buying 20 at a time.
So what we do have to end this pretty soon. What is the last like advice you'd give to somebody who wants to start a small government contractor? You know, what's like the big lesson?
Look to the sky for the UFOs to help. Well,
you talked about luck, well, but I don't think it's really luck.
Well, no,
it's,
there's luck of like, as far as like, luck is a really important thing in general of a lot of things. And it's more about, it's not really about luck as much as about timing and being ready to take advantage of, like, when that thing happens, you need to be ready. I'd say the next challenge after that is when you're yourself, it can get a lot harder. It's very hard to talk a company into bringing you onto another contract, right? Because their conversation is, okay, well, you're a small company and you're just you, or you're three people even, like, or you're five people, like, you're really small. And they're like, so who from your company is going to come support my contract? Like, what do you do that can come, who's going to do
that?
What are you bringing that I can't, that my recruitment staff can't handle? And that's, you need to find yourself a niche where you can bring something. Like, for us, we know that's millennials and Gen Z. Like,
but could you could bring a technical skill though that maybe they didn't have. And but did you have a company? So the first companies that you worked for, you said you had already worked for them. So there was a relationship there and they were open to, I can bring you on cause I like Rob.
Well, yeah, it was more like they wanted me to stay in my position.
Right.
And they were willing to do that transition over. And then
what I'm getting at, I think though, is you got to have some kind of, I don't want to say big brother, but some corporation that's willing, an established organization that's willing to help you.
Well, relationships are the important thing, right? Relationships and everything are going to be what really brings things together. But I think that when you go to scale, when you try to get bigger, that's when things can be a little difficult, because as a small company with one to five people, people don't see much value in adding you to a contract that you're not already on, or you're not going to provide some of the people that you have today.
Unless you're very specialized, right? Unless you're one of 10 people in the world that knows this, develop this programming language.
But then, but then you're bringing your resources that you have now. So like the issue that we had initially was that we had all our resources allocated 100% to a contract, and we were talking to other companies and they were like, oh, so who's coming?
Yeah.
And we're like, well, all our people are, they're busy. Yeah.
What's your bench look like, right?
Yeah. And that's something that you got to figure out, you know, how you're going to navigate that conversation, because that's going to be a conversation that happens and what your strategy is going to be. So maybe you start off on one contract, that contract comes to an end and there's a recompete, and now you have an opportunity to pitch onto a contract, or your contract's coming to an end, there's going to be a recompete, you have an opportunity to go to three different contracts and hit up all three primes and say, you know what, we'll bid our people on those contracts because our contract's ending. So it just opens up more opportunity, but you have to figure out how you're going to navigate that conversation. Cause I've told a lot of people, right, who think about starting their own company, they think that it could be really easy to scale, but that step to 20 people, I think, is really difficult because you don't have the resources to move around or to really support a proposal effort.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I think he'd be a perfect fit for the MBA program, from Moe's MBA program.
Mm. We'll talk about that afterwards.
We will.
Yeah. Rob, this is really good. Yep. Man, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having
me. I'm glad
on.
We got to do this. We need to have some more conversations outside of this. Yeah, yeah.
How do people get a hold of you?
So you can go, if you go to recro.com, my phone number's on there on the website.
It's recro.com.
Recro.com. We'll take you there. Our site isn't very specific. This is another thing that as a small business I thought about was, what do we want our website to do for us? Mm-hmm. Our website doesn't sell us. Our website keeps us from being disqualified. So we sell ourselves through directly hitting people up, right? And sending capability statements that are targeted around certain features. But our website's goal is that, we got brought onto some int work, right? Some intelligence analysis work. And our website was all focused around tech. And I was like, if I was the guy's boss that brought us on this intelligence contract, I'd be asking, if I went to this website, I'd ask them, well, why would you bring this company that's a tech company onto this? So we kind of looked at that and said, we need to make our website more broad. Now we're looking at, like, how do we focus in on some more areas? And, it's always growing. But so the website's great, or my first name, last name at recro.com as well. So it's Robert Lataille, Lataille at recro.com. We're always looking for opportunities to team with people and go after more work. We're really aggressive right now in growth. So, we're not, we'll say no to something that doesn't make any sense for us. But other than that, we're looking and we're trying to find those right partnerships that make sense.
So Recro is spelled RECRO.
Yes.
.com. Yep. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Again, this was really good. I really appreciate your time.
This is a long one.
And it was a good conversation, though. Yeah. Learned a lot of stuff today. And you see, I take a lot of notes. Mm-hmm. I do that on most of them. But, I'm always, me talking to people every week, we talk to folks, and I'm always learning, right? It's a never-ending journey, I think, and you had some good insights today. So I appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me on.
Oh, that's awesome. And take some pictures. I want to see the travel.
Well, so my girlfriend supposedly is going to make a YouTube channel. So
you really?
Can, yeah, you just follow us like Delos.
I bet I'm a huge Delos fan. So,
yeah. Some other ones I can talk to you about. There's some good ones out there.
I've got three children, so I'm not doing that. I think
we should record our lives. We're going down to Dinosaurs this weekend.
So. We are going down to walk the Picket Wire Canyon this weekend. I'm taking the scouts down there. And
he's dragging me along.
22-mile round trip or something like that.
We're fine. See. He's only taking me so I can carry the kids when they go, I can't go any farther, Mr. Gator.
That's like me carrying my dogs. I have to wear a backpack in case I get tired.
I had to carry my dog at the dunes. So the sand got really hot. We went to the dunes this weekend.
Poor dogs.
No, yeah. And like, I'm like, I can't let him walk on this because my feet were burning. So I grabbed him. I was carrying him. It was exciting.
I hate sand.
It was bad. Anyways, we got to end.
Okay. Okay, well, thanks a lot for coming on. Thanks for coming to the office and doing this thing in person. It's so much better when we do this in person. So, Dennis, till next week, this is The Small signing off.
Thanks for listening.
You've reached the end of another episode of The Smalls Cast Podcast. Connect with us at thesmalls.org. Don't forget to sign up to our newsletter to receive our free materials. See you at the next episode.
See you at the next episode.